Hey, thank you so much for joining us on the Entrepreneur Dad podcast. So what we're doing today is we're talking to Bo Beard. So Bo is a chiropractor, but he's taken a different path into chiropractic. He was once a commodities broker. He once worked in Florida selling insurance. He's also worked at a ski resort, and he met his amazing wife at chiropractor school, who was with another guy when he first met her. So it's a very interesting story. He's taken all kinds of paths. He even ended up in a city where he knew nobody. So it's a great story. Please listen in on what he has to say about all the things that he's done in his life. Talking about your podcast, because a lot of people out there that watch this from an entrepreneurial standpoint. Mm-hmm. So starting out, how many listeners or views or whatever did mm-hmm. you have that first year, the first 15 episodes? How many did you average or whatever?
I probably averaged like 1,500 episode. Like,
that's a lot.
Though. Initial download, like right when it drops.
Okay.
Right? And then the residuals over a period of time. But I think a lot of that was, I was trying to use it to network, but also in my profession, a big part of trying to create income outside of the clinic is teaching, right? Going out on the road and teaching seminars and clinics. So I was catering more to my profession, my colleagues, and saying, hey, I want to show you what we're doing in our clinic, maybe teach you something, show you some things that we're doing. And then through that, if I get 1,500 of my colleagues, everybody's going crazy about it, and then that helps build things out of here. So it's not always geared towards the patient, which we've gotten feedback on, right? Like, hey, talk at our level. And I've always tried to play in between of like, A, I think I should be talking to a patient on a higher level than they think, because you have to be your own health advocate. So I shouldn't just be saying, hey, this is your ankle. Let's get it
for
to
sure.
move. Let's learn a little bit.
So you want to as much teach them. So here's the bad part, though. From a business standpoint, you're kind of teaching them out of coming to see you.
100%. But that is our business model.
Yeah.
So let's talk
about the business in general. So you own the farm.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And so business has gotten to be, a business owner has gotten to be cool, but you're a doctor, you're a chiropractor that owns a farm. So tell me what, as far as the farm is concerned, what is the goal? Obviously the goal is to create money and all that kind of stuff. But what is the goal for you guys at the farm?
Well, and I went to business school, right?
Yeah.
So I worked a little bit
We'll get
before.
To that.
Yeah. But the goal of the farm is to really change the game, right? Be a change agent within the healthcare industry.
Right.
And what I mean by that is my profession, the chiropractic profession, kind of got a bad rap there for a while, right?
My dad used to call them witch doctors. Seriously,
we've gotten called that, lovingly, maybe a little
tongue-in-cheek.
Yeah,
for sure. But that was back in the day, though, Bo, chiropractors and naturopaths and
even DOs,
homeopathy, that was the and I say back in the day, 1800s, early 1900s.
Yeah.
That was who performed medicine, mm-hmm. or who performed, I say medicine, what's the word I'm looking for? Performed health.
Yeah, healthcare.
Healthcare.
Yeah.
And then it went through a style where chiropractors were not respected, I think, in some ways. And then now you guys are to me, we don't go to a regular doctor.
Yeah.
We
isn't it funny that you even have to say that, a regular doctor?
I agree.
So that connotation, yeah. We hear people all the time and they don't understand what they're saying or I guess catch it, but they'll say, I went to a real doctor yesterday, and you're like, that's interesting. But it's just interesting that we still have that mindset of, I'm not an MD, but I'm still a physician.
Absolutely.
And I try to play at that level. Like one of my mentors is Dr. Brett Winchester, and he always says, I'm trying to push the limit of what a chiropractor can do.
Right.
Not in an incredulous way of hey, let's see where I can get, but
let's get in the gray.
Hey, let's be as good as I can. So if you come in and something's going on, I may not be able to treat, but I know what I can do to help you by referral, give you some info, and kind of just point you in the right direction.
So chiropractor, you had an accident in middle school.
So we're backing way up.
So tell me about that kind of changed the way you thought about things in general. So tell me about the accident in middle school where you were told, hey bro, you're not gonna play sports again, you're not gonna do anything. So tell me about that. What happened?
So I was playing backyard football, actually back school, and best friend jumped on my back, tackled me. My leg went out to the side, weird little freak accident, broke my femur. Okay. I was in the hospital for 2 weeks, had a surgery. I still have a titanium rod in my femur and a few screws. And my physical therapy consisted of walking up three stairs, walking down three stairs, and they said, see you later. And I was told, you'll probably never run. You're definitely going to have a limp, and you shouldn't play contact sports because the risk of secondary injury could result in possible amputation.
Wow.
Which really freaks your mom out, right?
And you're so, how old at this time?
I'm now 35.
No, how old were you at the
time? Oh, at that time, 9. So it's 9 years old.
So he haven't gone through puberty.
No.
Growth plates, all that weirdo stuff.
We're in a very small town. We don't know. My parents don't know any better. I don't know any better. They had to fly a surgeon from Chicago to do my surgery because I was one of the first pediatric patients in the U.S. to have that done. So I get told all this. I have absolutely zero rehab. Well, fast forward to freshman, sophomore year, high school, we start playing football. After a football game, we go back and watch films, and one of my coaches was a hard-nosed ex-Marine, and he goes, Beard, why are you limping? I had no clue that I, you know, when I was running, I was limping around. And as soon as he said that, I went out the next time, no limp, right? This like instantaneous feedback loop. Well, luckily for me, during that time, a chiropractor moved into my small little town in central Illinois that was a silver medalist in judo in the Olympics.
Wow.
Just happened to move into Canton, Illinois.
Little bit down.
I sprained an ankle. I went in and saw her, and just like I would do with a patient now, she looked at more than my ankle. She goes, what's going on here?
Yeah.
You know, what, you know, I told her the story, and she's like, she started working with me and kind of helped develop me as an athlete.
So how much did that play into when you were, you know, 14, 15 years old? How much did that play into what you do now?
Oh, huge. I started to think, oh, I would want to do this one day. And, one of my best friends from my same hometown ended up going to chiropractic school, so then he was kind of a voice in my ear the whole time. I started out pre-med, and then as I started going through it, I think I got scared.
Right.
So I switched to business, which, funny enough, a marketing degree is probably one of the most broad degrees you could get that has no, like, guidelines of what you're supposed to do. It just says, hey, I have a business degree.
Right.
So that wasn't safe at all. It was just me really being afraid, and it took me 3 years after undergrad of going out and working in Florida and Colorado and Alaska in various fields to realize, hey, I really do want to do this chiropractic thing, and went back to grad school in 2009.
So it's interesting. You had an accident when you were 9, then you had a buddy that really, you had a chiropractor that moved in your hometown that made it, had a huge impact. So it's almost like, and you know, I know you're a believer and you love Jesus, so we can talk through this. So it's almost like the Lord said one time, hey, this is huge. And then a second time when you meet this chiropractor that helped you, hey, this is something. Mm-hmm. And then you had a friend that was doing it, and hey, this is really cool. Mm-hmm. And then turned away.
Oh, 100%.
Would you just wake up one day and say, hey, this is not what I need to be doing?
So another little side story. During that whole time when I moved to Alaska and was working with a gold refinery, I was kind of like, you know, what is my life going to look like in a couple years? And my sister just happened to meet a man who at the time was a captain in the Army. And he kind of said, hey, have you ever thought about the military? Because I was a little lost. I was kind of like, man, I, you know, got a college degree, but I'm not really utilizing like my skills as a person. So he goes, if you would ever think about this, I think I could help fast track you into like special forces. Because I said, if I'm going to do it, I want to do it all the way. So the funny story and, you know, a quick 30-second blurb is I went all the way through this. I got a letter from a 4-star general saying, hey, we'll fast track you. I get into the MEPS, which is your medical entrance exam. And we did a test for colorblindness. I've known I was colorblind since I was 3 or 4. They didn't know. And we get to the last test and the guy goes, are you colorblind? I go, yeah. And he goes, you're done. So there's another road.
Never mind, you have a titanium rod in your leg.
We had to get that medical exemption taken care of for sure. And that was a hurdle, which it helps to have a letter from a general. But yeah, that kind of was, you know, and you look back and you're like, you know, that wasn't my path. Like, thank goodness that happened. But after that, like, I mean, I was pretty upset about that. And I think I may have called that friend that was practicing chiropractic in South Carolina. I said, you know, I don't know quite what I want to do. How's practice going? And he just said, I think you should do it, man. You're a perfect fit. And put in my entrance form to Logan University. And
so how old are you at this time? Because you've got big boy jobs. Like you're a commodities broker, which sounds really cool and sounds like you make a lot of money.
Sounds cool. Yeah.
It sounds cool. But then you work for North Face and then you work for
Telluride.
So we're talking like, I mean, I imagine you're making relatively decent money.
I actually walked away from the most money my first job out of college. I was working in Tampa, Florida for an insurance firm. And I really quickly decided this isn't my life. I saw right. what the people that have been doing that for 20 years. And that's why I moved to Colorado. It was kind of an escapism.
Yeah.
And I guess we're finding a consistent theme of me turning away from things, but it ended up back where I should have started in the first place. But yeah, I turned away from all that stuff. And then, I did a lot of soul searching during that time.
Yeah, for sure.
I was just thinking about this the other day of how much of my time in all of those areas, you know, whether it was going into the outdoors in places like Alaska or, you know, moving away from family and friends to kind of do my own thing was really me trying to figure out who I am. And I needed to do that. And I was 25 when I went back to grad school, which isn't ideal, but had I done it right out of undergrad, I wouldn't have appreciated near as much.
Right. And we grow so much during those years. I felt like from 18 to 22 when I was in college, like I could really honestly care less if my three kids go to college at this point, because we are in a society of constant learning and my trying to coach that into my kids right now. But I have a history degree mm-hmm. and a master's in education administration. I mean, so like my degree is in absolutely nothing because I knew I wanted to go coach college football.
Mm-hmm.
So at that, but I've learned so much from 18 to 22 about living. From how to pay bills, to taking care of your drunk friends, to dealing with a roommate, to dealing with just people in general. I learned so much because I was on my own. I wasn't with my folks.
Yeah.
And that sounds like what you did. You did it obviously in college, but you had a chance to go do it on a larger scale and traveling. Lord, you had a great opportunity from Alaska to Colorado to Florida. That was amazing. And from Illinois. So you're 25 years old and you transition into this chiropractic thing.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So are you married yet?
No.
Have you ever met your wife at this point?
No.
Okay.
A couple serious girlfriends, but
nothing serious. So you're go to a chiropractic school, and then what from there?
So show up to chiropractic school, and so I'm one of not the oldest kids. So I went into chiropractic school at the same time that the recession hit. So it was an interesting time for grad school because this was 2008. Yeah, 08, 09. So there's a lot of people that like secondarily were getting out of careers and going back to school because it was a safety net.
For sure.
So it was a weird time to enter grad school like that.
Gotcha.
So I wasn't the oldest cat in the field right there. But when I came in, I was also one of the people with the most cash in hand from the jobs I'd had. I had no previous debt.
No debt.
So I came in kind of free, which was awesome because I did have some undergrad debt that I paid off and all that. But I came in with a very open mind and a totally different perception of how I was going to attack school. When I went into undergrad, I could have cared less about school. And I hate to say that.
Me too.
But I was there to hang out, have fun. Yeah, I wanted to get a degree, but it wasn't about what I was actually learning. It was about just going through, checking the boxes, and getting done.
Yeah. I mean, and that's what a lot of – I mean, unless you're going to be a doctor or a lawyer or whatever, it's like me. I knew what I was going to do. None of this sitting in biology 201 had anything to do with me knowing the difference in a two high and a one high safety and on defense. Because I knew I was going to go do that. But you didn't know, but you still – had the common sense enough to know that, hey, I got to do this because that's what you felt like you needed to have.
And one thing I will say about that, and when my wife and I have kids, hopefully I can instill this in our children, you never know what you're going to need from what you previously did.
Absolutely.
So you should always be all in.
That's
and
so good.
I wasn't
That's
in
so
a lot
good.
Of parts of my life. Yeah. And I have to look back with a little bit of regret, honestly, and be like, man, I wish I would have put a little more effort into that. And that's something now that I never take for granted.
Right.
But like I said, I needed all that. So when I get into grad school, I was all in, right?
Yeah.
And I not only did very well in school, but it was the extracurriculars, the connections, the networking that I was involved with mm-hmm. that got me kind of fast-tracked to when I got out of school, I had the opportunity to open a place like this,
right.
which was not really our plan from the get-go.
Right.
So I met my wife, Sloan, the other Dr. Beard.
Who's wonderful.
Yes. We actually met her the very first day of school, but she was dating somebody else, so that was not happening for a while. and she could tell the intro story better than me, but I did not like hit it off.
Yeah.
But we started dating within the last year of school, got engaged within the last 6 months. So things are speeding up, right? And when we graduated, we took a trip to Tallahassee, which is where she was from. And she had an offer to work at Florida State University as a chiropractor. Her chiro growing up had an office in Florida State's training facility. Well, there was a job for one chiro, not two.
Not two.
So I messed that whole thing up for her.
No doubt.
Well, I had a job with my mentor. There was only one job, not two.
In Illinois.
In St. Louis, Missouri.
In St. Louis, okay.
So we were stuck. We're like, what are we going to do? So we took a trip to Tallahassee and we got a lot of no's. I went to a bank. I literally got laughed out of the bank at one point about with my business plan of you're two kids with a bunch of debt. There's no way we're going to be able to finance it. Job offers weren't there. So we're driving back, going up Highway 65, and all of a sudden her car breaks down and we're 10 miles south of Birmingham. So
this is like a freaking movie.
You want to talk about like God stepping in? I mean, we broke down and she had a Volkswagen, so we had to find a Volkswagen dealer. We ended up at Royal Volkswagen over here on Highway 31. They brought us in, they set us up with an office. We had our dog with us, they fed us, they fed our dog, gave us an office to study in. They stayed open an hour late and they got us back on the road. And when we're leaving, it was sunset, driving through Vestavia Hills, and we're like, these people are so nice. And we started looking on the way back. I think Sloan was Googling job offers. We came back and visited 2 months later, and lo and behold, she got a job offer. And we kind of just said, we don't know anybody. It's in between where we're both from. What do you think? And just took a leap.
That's awesome. I didn't know that story. That's amazing. Yeah. So when you guys moved to Birmingham, and what year is this? This is
2013. Sloan moved here.
So she moved
ahead of me. I did my residency for my master's degree at Bradley University back in Illinois.
Right.
So she was here 2.5-3 months before I was. So here's another part of the story. The job offer that she got, I had a job at the same clinic. And then we had an option to buy into this clinic through sweat equity.
Okay.
Well, she's working at this clinic.
For people that don't know what sweat equity is, explain that proposal that you had, that specific proposal.
So we were both going to be working docs, and a portion of what we would be making salary-wise was actually going to go to buying this practice out.
So if your salary was $50,000,
they may take 25, so we're only taking home 25 ourselves, and then that's going towards buying the practice over an 8 to 10 year period.
Hmm.
Right? So it was a really good scenario for people that don't have money.
For sure.
Because we can work and buy a practice and get equity, and now we own a business. So Sloan shows up. It is not our practice style, but she's making it happen, right? She's seeing a lot of patients. It's a high turnover clinic. And we're both just sharing our experiences. I'm living in Illinois with my parents, and she's living here. So I show up 2.5 months later, and we have a meeting with the clinic owners, and there's not a job for me. They say there's not enough money, there's no job, and I'm just like, I just moved here.
Yeah.
So I'm a little freaking out now. Sloan still has to keep her job. So I go and I visit with every chiropractor in Birmingham. At the time, there were 29. I had a list. And everybody was extremely open and welcoming and nice, and a couple people offered space for me to rent, right, when they weren't in the office. But I quickly realized nobody practiced how I wanted to, and I was a little bit older coming out of school, and I just kind of clicked of like, you're not going to be happy doing this. Don't sacrifice that much for doing everything you've done. So Sloan came home one night, and we were in a small apartment over here on Highway 280, and I said, I think we're going to have to open our own practice.
Okay.
And she's like, we can't do that. We have no money. We don't know how.
Okay, so let me ask you a question. So anytime you talk about business, there's always a debt question.
Mm-hmm.
You take out debt, do you not take out debt, do you grow it slow, do you go work for somebody, build, make some money, and then go open your own deal? I mean, so again, borderline forced.
Oh, arm twisted into this for
into
sure.
Into doing this.
Yeah.
So tell me, so you have both of you have student, like student loan debt?
Oh yeah.
A bunch of it?
Yeah.
Okay. Both of you got student loan debt. You don't have any income coming in, and she's got a little bit. Because she's doing the
sweat equity. Fairly well.
She's doing the sweat equity thing.
Mm-hmm.
So you got a little bit of income, but I mean, like, it's not.
Oh,
there's no money there. So tell me so how'd you do that?
So we were banking with a larger bank, and I went to them one day and I just said, hey, you know, can we get a commercial loan? And they kind of ran some numbers and they come back and they say, we can give you a $10,000 credit line. And to me, that was almost a slap in the face.
Well, credit line's a gigantic interest rate, too.
Yeah. So I mean, it's. And I go, what am I supposed to do with that? So they go, that's all we can do. And I was like, okay. So I didn't say no. Give me the credit line. And then started looking around. And I had a cardboard box much like this in our apartment with a computer on it. And that's kind of, we had that and some furniture. And I started going to town. And I wore out the office in our little apartment complex leasing area. Yeah. I was in there all the time. And I found the Small Business Development Group of Alabama. So this is a non-for-profit made, backed up by the SBA that helps coach and guide and connect people. and a wonderful guy in there just kind of helped work me through this process of trying to get an SBA loan, which is an excruciating process.
Why is it so hard?
It's so hard because they're giving money to people with no collateral, no equity anywhere else.
Is it the whole thing of like they make it hard to get, because if they didn't make it hard to get, because a lot of people quit.
Mm-hmm.
Like, this is too hard, I'm not going to do it.
Yeah.
So is that why they make it hard?
I think they make it hard because it's such a small pool of money.
Gotcha.
So they're trying to make sure that you are going to withstand that 5-10 year allotment of the loan and not give up and not, because it's almost less, sure, they want to make their money back with interest, right? These are through privately.
It's business people.
Yeah. But I really think it's a good program. They're trying to get people that wouldn't otherwise be able to start a business to start one.
Would you recommend, because there's somebody out there watching this right now that either knows somebody that wants to start their own business or is trying to start their own business, would you recommend that method of,
you know,
of capital?
I think your first option is always personal investors for a lot of reasons.
Really?
I would 100% say that. For a couple reasons. I think if I went to somebody I personally knew, I'm going to be way more on the hook than a bank that I could almost hang it up and say, hey, I'm going to file bankruptcy.
Nah, no big deal. Gotcha.
No way I'm doing that to my mom or dad or a friend,
right,
or, you know, an acquaintance. We didn't have that option. So yeah, we had to go this route. And we did have some family help of people kind of making it look like we had some money in some places, which we got coached on. And that's nothing illegal or wrong. It was just like, hey, you've got to kind of, you guys have nothing. So we had to use some people to kind of like position us, and I'm so thankful for it. But we got coached through that, and it probably took 2.5 months. And it's just a ton of back and forth paperwork. And so that all started in October of 2013.
Okay.
We pegged the business to be open by January 25th of 2014. So this is quick.
Right.
And the business finally opened up on February 14th, 2014.
So you go through the whole process, and so your model's a little different.
Yeah.
We talked about that a little bit earlier. Your model's a little bit different. Did you get any pushback or any negativity from your mentor in St. Louis and anybody else that you lend, maybe any professors from your college, any negative, like, hey, you can't do that?
So no negative input. A lot of people voiced their concern, parents, and, you know, obviously that's their job.
Listen, my dad freaked out when he was coaching. Like, so I get it.
Yeah.
You sure you won't do that, son?
But I think my mom's getting used to it. I also was the guy that quit a good job in Florida to travel across the country.
Right.
So not really any negative input from family and friends, but the PT Cairo community in here, we literally got some nasty letters because I think people felt threatened. Right, I had a blog that I had started because I knew I needed to start online marketing before we opened.
For sure.
I mean, we got threats of, you know, we were called The Farm, and anybody that knows that the CIA is called The Farm, a guy literally got on there and said, I worked for The Real Farm, we'll make sure you never make it. And I was like,
what does that mean, though? Like, why aren't people just want to hate?
So, but that fuels me, you know,
yeah, for sure.
And it always has. And I try to not, you know, fight negativity with negativity and retaliate with, like, showing them what we can do. So we do have a different model, and that model has always been based on active care, right? I want to educate and empower the patient to be their own health advocate. I want them to be able to take care of themselves. And yeah, a lot of people told us, you're not going to make it. You're not going to make it in the area you're in. You're picking a poor office space. You don't know how to run a business.
Yeah.
I mean, we heard it all. But for whatever reason, and to this day, I don't know why, I never had a single doubt. I've doubted myself on a lot of stuff. Numerous things.
Yeah.
I've skydived a couple times. I doubted myself every time, which is
a freaking blank.
But for this, there was never an inkling of doubt. I've had more doubt after 2 years of practice of like, man, am I doing stuff right? Should I do this? But going into it, there was nothing.
What do you contribute that to?
You know, to be honest with you, I was extremely confident in my skill. And I think just if I was a chef.
Okay, skill as a chiropractor or
yes,
skill as a marketer? Because here's the thing. If we... You got both. You got both mm-hmm. educations.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't really count the education from school. I mean, because
I
how
either.
Much do you really learn from marketing in school? Because marketing changes.
I love
the
SIU.
Yeah,
yeah,
you're awesome. But so, how much do you contribute the marketing being willing to get bodies in the door,
yeah,
or to your actual skills as a chiropractor?
So, I took my skill level as my marketing. So when we first started, we had no office. So I got into trail running probably 5 years before I moved to Birmingham, which ended up being a godsend because we started going out and working races before we had an office, before we had any money.
Yeah.
And I just kept telling people, we're going to have an office. Because people would ask, hey, I'd work on them. I'd talk to them. We'd stretch them out, do whatever. And they'd say, where's your office at? I don't have one.
Yeah.
It's coming.
Our next event is going to be.
But it was a little weird because people would be like, oh, what are you doing out here? I'd be like, marketing.
You know what? I met Sloan. I don't even know if you were there. I met Sloan at an event downtown at the Boutwell.
Yeah, I wasn't there.
And hit it off with her. Jackie was there. It was great. I don't even know if y'all had an office then.
Probably not. Yeah, we did things a little backwards. But we always had a plan, right? We knew that we were going to have something happening. But coming out of that, being able to talk to people and be one-on-one with them was literally like me going and knocking on doors. I was just going to a race instead. And
you had a captive audience.
I mean,
you went to the audience, but instead of going, like you said, door-to-door, you had 100, 200, 300 people.
Yeah, which was the other strategic plan to not put chiropractic in the name of our business right away. I'm proud I'm a chiropractor, but I knew I couldn't market as one to get the message across of what we were going to do in this office.
Mm.
And that rubs some people in my profession the wrong way, but I love being a chiropractor. I don't love using that to go round people up because of the stigma that got built for many years.
Well, like Jay Abraham. Jay Abraham is one of the top marketers ever. I mean, he's probably in his 50s or 60s now, probably his 60s now. But one of the things he talks about in one of his books is don't look at what your industry is doing. So if you sell insurance, don't look at all the other insurance salesmen and what they're doing to publicize their business. Look outside of your industry and market in a way that a car salesman, just whatever, or a restaurant to market your business. That's really what you're doing. Because chiropractors, I mean, like I got a guy in Cookeville that his sign on his strip mall, his sign, it just says
chiropractor.
Chiropractor.
And we all, somebody wanted to sell us one of those.
That's it, chiropractor.
Yeah. And not, you know, that works for a lot of people. My good friend in South Carolina, that's his kind of style.
Yeah.
He does very well. I love him to death. I think also in my profession, there is a lot of indignation of if we have differing ideals. What we have to realize, that's a professional thing. Like, I still can like you and we can have differing professional ideals. But when we moved in here, I wanted to kind of put down a firm foot of like, hey, this is how we do things. I'm looking out for you.
Right.
That is not, like, I know it is not the best business model, but I would much rather have a very slow build and get myself into a concrete pillar of the society of like, I'm going to go to that guy because I trust him. I think he knows what he's doing.
Right.
And at the end of the day, that will build, I think, a long-term viable business.
Long-term, like, long-term is the key. Like the way we've grown our business is we've not taken any debt, never borrowed any money from anybody. I mean, it was like a bar from a bar to a laptop. So we've done the same thing in essence. We've been in it 6 years now and you guys are
we're right there.
At that number.
Yeah.
And it has been the slow, steady increase. Now we grew very quickly to start, like doubled income the first year or two, whatever.
Nice.
But I mean, it has been just like, kind of just like a steady climb. I'm glad for it because honestly, I don't know that I could have handled it.
We said that a lot.
If it was,
yeah,
you know, a gigantic skyrocket in growth. So where are you at? Are you from a business standpoint, financially, have you seen just a steady increase in, I guess, just overall income over the 6 years that you guys have been in business?
Yeah, in complete transparency, that first year, because we had such a, hey, we want to come see you. When we opened, it was just like, right? And we're like, oh, this is awesome.
Yeah.
6 months in, we were just being doctors because we got so busy. And all of a sudden, we start looking at the books. I'm like, this is not so hot.
Wow.
And we got a little scared to the point, and this, I've never talked about this on anything before. I was calling that friend in South Carolina being like, do you think we should close? Before we run out of money completely and are reversed and ended up having to pay people with nothing that we have.
Right.
And he even kind of said, yeah. And I was like, and we went back and forth. We're like, no, we got to double down. And we doubled down. And that's when a lot of the digital marketing came into place. And we really just kind of said, You know, we may never make $1 million on the walls of this place, but if we start putting info out there, that's A, going to bring more people in, and there may be opportunities right. that get opened up. And then from year two, we used to be right across the street here in a smaller office. That's when we saw a steady incline to probably year four, and we're year five and a half, going on six now. And then moving into this office, you take a little hit. We doubled our space, double our overhead.
Overhead goes up, yeah.
And off of that, we kind of had a flatline year, but then we brought in contractors, massage therapists, strength and conditioning coaches. So there's your kind of passive revenue where we're not doing the work. And now this year, it was another double down of like, hey, let's set goals of exactly how many people we're going to see each day, each month, each year, and then open opportunities for us exiting the clinic eventually of hiring other doctors and giving ourselves the opportunity to leave when we want.
All right. So I want to get back to the goals question because that's gigantic. Okay. But my first question is, after talking to your guy in South Carolina, who was a friend slash, I mean, I would say he was be a mentor.
Oh, 100%.
Okay.
Yeah.
After talking to him and him really insinuating, hey, Bo, y'all need to shut her down and go work for somebody else or whatever. From that conversation, you come back to Sloan and say, this is what's his name?
Clay.
Well, this is what Clay said. Y'all sit at the kitchen table and say, what do we do? So what was the things or two or three things that you did that helped you get over the edge? You talked about the digital marketing, but give me some specifics.
Yeah.
I know this was 3 or 4 years ago, but give me some specifics of what you did to help get you over that. Holy crap.
Well, this is where I go into kind of marketing mode is I just started testing, right? We started testing different programs and memberships and how would we sell things. And a lot of failures occurred, but that's all good stuff to me. That drives Sloan nuts. But to me, it's the faster you can test and fail, the faster you figure stuff out. And that's how we developed, like, how long do we see people? You know, how many people can we see a day that's viable and not going to burn us out, but create enough income to make it, you know, sustainable.
And also allot yourself enough time to level these patients.
Yeah. And then I think the biggest part of that was realizing, again, I go back to my mentor a lot in St. Louis. I think the guy makes double his income speaking than he does in his clinic, and he makes a lot of money in his clinic. So there is a lot of opportunity to get the good word out of, you know, I'm always trying to create a better filter for people. There's a lot of info out there. So I don't know everything by any means, but I can help you sift through the information, right?
Right.
And once I started realizing that, it was like, you know, YouTube took off, and then I got a couple teaching gigs. I started coaching for the Navy Wounded Warrior Project.
Right.
Like, all these things started coming about, and it's not like I'm, you know, making $1 million a year or anything, but a slow build for me is far better than, you know, I can't see 70 people a day. That's not my style.
No, for sure.
But at the end of the day, I think if I have 20 people that see me and they're just like, this guy is awesome, they're going to tell, you know, all their friends, and now I have an easy... We've never paid for traditional advertising. Never. Ever.
What have you paid for? Have you paid for anything?
I mean, we may have boosted a few
Facebook stuff,
ads.
Something like that.
We've paid maybe for a few CrossFit sponsorships to get into an event. But other than that, I mean, we've never, you know, people come to us in magazines and newspapers and everything. And me being in the marketing field, I think I know that ROI equation and know what I'm supposed to get.
Right.
That for our business style, those never fit. It wouldn't. I would have to see 70 people to pay for a newspaper ad. And that's not going to happen.
That's not what you wanted to do.
100%.
Okay. So you were really organic. It was more, I mean, Chet Holmes wrote a book, and his theory was the education marketing, telling people about how they can get well, which builds a brand because you've got the farm brand. But honestly, Bo, you've built a Bo Beard brand in a way that's kind of like the farm, Bo, Sloan, which I love it. I think it's great.
Which has been a conversation numerous times.
Yeah, for sure. I know it's got to be. You've been too intentional about it for it not to have happened. But it's not like gaudy and self. I would never call it. Even though I don't think self-promotion is a bad thing.
Because
you're not promoting Bo as an amazing person. You're promoting Bo. I've got good information that can help you. Like, I'm not. Because the bulk of the time, you're not trying to sell anything. Mm-hmm. You're trying to tell people this good information. And for me, that's a lot of what I do. This is, hey, these are the things that we think you should do. There's nothing in there about go buy this. It's
and I think I that. Need, sometimes I need a little prodding to be a little more of the closer, right? Like, hey, you're giving really good info. You right. could also flip that a little bit and make some money. But I also, that first job that I said I quit in Tampa, Florida,
yeah.
I started out inside sales for an insurance brokerage firm. And I killed it. Yeah. I mean, I hated being on the phone. Absolutely hated it. But I wanted to make money.
For sure.
And I just killed it. Made all my calls. Made sales. I became a regional manager. Was wow. traveling all over. And then I quickly realized, like, okay, I really like being stable in my financial household. Mm-hmm. But I do not like being driven by finances.
Yeah, I get it.
And as soon as I figured that out, I was like, what do you really want to do?
Right.
And that's what I ask myself every day. If I'm coming in here and I look at patients like a dollar sign or a book that I want to write as money, that changes the whole perspective on what I'm doing.
Absolutely. You've got to be able to give first. And I feel like that's what you're doing.
Yeah.
So talk about those goals. Mm-hmm. You'd set some goals.
Yeah.
So give me an example of some of those goals were.
And some of it's kind of embarrassing, but you know, be an open book. We got to a point where we said, you know, we're doing so much stuff, we're talking, and we kind of got a little like, I don't need to see that many people. So like, wait a minute. Do you see how many gaps are in our schedule where we're right. just kind of like, yeah, we're working, but are we really
computer
maximizing?
Work.
Yeah. So all we said is if we saw 6 more people a day
okay.
for an average number of days per month, right, working wise, that equals $200,000 gross income
wow.
extra.
So 6 more people between the two of you, or 6 more for Bo and 6 more for Sloan?
6 more total.
3 more people per yeah. person. Okay, that's a lot.
Yeah.
It's a lot of people. I mean, that's a lot of money for
a lot of money,
sounds
yeah.
like.
Not a lot more work. Yeah. And that's why we had to kind of be like, are we being lazy? You had to ask yourself that question.
That's hard.
And I'm being completely honest. And I said, you know what? I think we were so focused on building those outside opportunities that we forgot that this is our main source of income. That's and good. Once we realized that's that, really we set, hey, we've got to see 21 people a day. And then we okay. set also incentives for our staff. You need to get us 21 people a day consistently. And I'll make sure that we, you know, right. You know, reward you for that. But I never realized something about my wife is she would be a sales killer. She started putting tallies up on the whiteboard back there. I've got to see this many people. She was never doing that before.
Right.
And she was getting very burned out. And I don't want to see that many people. I feel like I'm not a good doctor if I see too many people. But all of a sudden it was like, oh, I only have to see this many people for that much money. And all of a sudden it was just like flipped a switch.
Wow. Where did you come up with a number? Just looking at the books and
looked at what we could do. So I had to look at like a year's worth of time and say, okay, if we're traveling this much, we have this many work days in a year, right? Okay. I have this many half hour and hour slots in a day. What would be feasible to do?
It's numbers.
Yeah.
It's all it was.
And just broke it down. And then we use an average patient visit average cost, which for us yeah. is like $85. Reverse engineered that and say, hey, that equals this much money.
What did you do to go get the 6 more then? So like you talk about, you never paid anything, you never did anything. So what did you do to increase to get 6 more people per day?
Started selling. So that's when, you know, we send out, like if you're a new patient, I'll take you through the process. You come in, your first visit's an hour. You're going to leave. Within the next 2 days, you're going to get a letter that says, thank you for coming in. It explains right. our referral rewards. We give you a little bit of money if you refer somebody in off your next visit, right? It's just, hey, it's a little cycle. We've always sent that out, and that was kind of, oh, cool. We let people know. Well, now I'm really asking people like, hey, do you know anybody gotcha. Else that's like dealing with the same thing that you are? And I'm also very much more vocal. I think I was guilty in the beginning of my career of wanting to get people out of here extremely too fast. I thought that was a benefit to them. Hey, 4 visits, you're done, right? That's better than seeing me for 6 months. Well, there's also a fine line between too little and too much.
Absolutely.
And I was way on the too little because I thought I was being a good guy. Well, what I ended up seeing was people were not getting better all the way, even though I did
all the way.
All the way. Right? I wasn't really creating a functional change. I was creating a decrease in pain, which if you really get into the bare bones, what we're about is not what I'm about.
Totally not. You're not wanting to get rid of the pain. You're wanting to get rid of the problem.
Yeah. And I would help the problem and I'd say, hey, you got these tools, right? These exercises, these videos. It wasn't enough.
Right.
So I had to kind of re-explore what our whole, you know, goal was in these walls and say, you know what? 2 or 3 more visits could be all the change we need. And yeah. 2 or 3 more visits is what we needed per day.
Right.
So it's kind of a, yeah, it benefits me, but But at the end of the day, I still weigh that against what is the best for you if you came and saw me as a patient.
So it's crazy that you were in marketing forever, and then what made the difference? And I tell my kids this. I have a 10-year-old, a 7-year-old, and a 3-year-old. I don't tell my 3-year-old this yet, but one of the best skills that you can have is selling.
Mm-hmm.
Chris Hodges, who's one of the best communicators and is a preacher, he is one of the best salespeople you'll ever meet.
Mm-hmm.
He sells the gospel. He sells the things you should do in your life. A teacher is a salesperson. A coach.
Mm-hmm.
The greatest coaches, one of the best coaches I've ever had, is a 5'11", 280-pound stumpy guy who is a football coach. He is one of the best salespeople ever, because I would do anything for that guy.
Mm-hmm.
He sold me on the fact of what I need to do. How important is that? I know it is, but for you, it's what came out.
Oh, yeah.
And transformed your business. What would you say to anybody listening or watching this? They say, well, I'm not a salesperson. How do you get better at that? And that's a silly question.
But I think there are people that, you know, I was trained in sales.
Okay. Like
Dale Carnegie, that stuff.
Oh, absolutely.
So there's being trained on how to sell anything will improve your sales skills, but it's whatever you're really meant to do, you're selling it. If you're a painter,
right?
And even if you never went to an art show and you're only creating it for yourself, well, you're going to starve.
For sure.
But if I say, okay, I'm creating this, and then I have to get my idea across to you, that's selling. That's what selling is transferring an idea. So we use this term all the time in our everyday life of getting buy-in. Buy-in is selling.
For sure.
I need buy-in of your idea of what we're doing in the clinic.
Right.
Well, I'm not selling you an idea of health, right? But at the end of the day, you're going to pay me for my service.
For sure.
So I really think it's like the transference of ideas, which comes down to communication. And some of the greatest communicators are really good storytellers. They can analogize really well. They're funny.
Right.
So those are what you need to get better at.
Yeah.
Not selling. Like if you go to a selling class, that's what you're working on.
Absolutely. Right?
Communication gets this broad umbrella. What are the pieces of that?
Yeah.
Being able to connect with people, being able to understand what they need. Sometimes being able to understand what they need without them understanding.
Yeah.
Those are the really good salespeople.
People are not here's the thing we all have to figure out. And whether I'm selling catering or meal prep or, you know, whatever it is we're doing in our business, people are not buying food.
Right.
Most of the time they're buying me.
Mm-hmm.
People are not buying the farm. They're buying you, or they're buying Sloan. And so I think the quicker we can figure out, and you said it, I don't know if you know you said it, but you said you were getting people out here too quick.
Mm-hmm.
But the best thing we can do in a business is create relationships, good relationships with people, because people want to be around, people will refer you to other people if they like you.
Yeah.
You know, and that's part of being a businessman. Whether you're a chiropractor, you do food or whatever, that's part of being that. So that's so good. So 5 questions that I've got for you that I always ask everybody, and what they are is just very, very easy questions. But you don't know what these questions are.
Lightning round. Yeah. Right.
Okay. So first question is, what does your morning routine look like?
So used to be way more in depth.
Okay.
Trim this puppy down. First thing, I get up, big glass of water.
Okay.
Throw a little Celtic sea salt in there. I drink it outside.
Okay. Tell me why.
Conservation guy. I think we lack a lot of connection with the outdoors. So that's just purely me saying, like, I may be in this office all day. I'm just going to go outside and sit on the back porch and drink glass water.
I'm doing it tomorrow morning.
Like, I don't know if that's going to change
my
life.
Tomorrow morning.
But it's my little piece of,
that's
like,
good.
I'm going to make myself do it. After that, I jump in the shower. I get to work super early. I'm in here usually by 5 a.m.
Okay.
And I've done that for a long time. For a very long time, I meditated when I first got in here, prayed a little bit. Now I kind of do breathing work on the way to work. We're about 3 miles from here,
okay.
So I'm doing some breath work.
Where do you get that from?
So a lot of it's just come from my own research. I've
right.
taught a lot of classes on breathing. Mutual friend Brian McKenzie,
teaches
some
yep.
awesome classes.
Yep.
But a conglomeration, Wim Hof, Brian McKenzie,
yeah.
meditation practices have been around
for
forever.
Sure, yeah.
But just trying to get my, really breathing for me is about like tapping in and like, hey, are you here?
Right.
Are you actually present? Usually I listen to some kind of podcast while I'm doing that
okay.
on the way to work. I get in here and I have a pretty hardcore routine of some coffee, right?
Yep.
Going to use some layered superfood. If you haven't tried that creamer.
Is it great?
Oh, I love it.
Awesome.
It used to be not so hot. He's reformulated. He's really good now.
Okay.
Got to throw that out there. But I journal when I get in here.
Okay.
And I'm starting to do right now a 60 days of a daily blog. So I take what I journal and I put some of that in there for me. It's very personal. And then I try to extrapolate some out in that daily blog. Because I was actually listening to Seth Godin talk a little bit. And he said, if you're not saying something unique every day, that you're basically not creating a bigger audience. And I don't think I'm doing that through Instagram all the time or a YouTube video. So that's just my way of getting an idea. And then beyond that, I come out into the space that is right behind us here and do a little movement, do a little vibration plate work, maybe 5-10 minutes. And then that's kind of my morning, man. I'm off seeing patients.
Do you vary your workouts?
So I don't really work out. I'm not a guy that works out in the morning ever. So reason being, I'm a huge creative in the morning. So that's why I'm going to write. I'm going to do any kind of project. If I have a presentation that I'm working on, if I have a talk.
That's interesting. Because you're a morning guy, though.
Huge morning guy. And I think it comes from sports. I always had to wake up and go to weights, go to conditioning.
For sure.
And I think when I didn't have to, I was like, that's my time.
I love it.
After this talk, I'm going to go trail run.
Right.
I'm in 105 degrees we're living in. But I like working out at night because it's like a cap. So in the evening, I get done, I take a shower, I've done my work in the morning.
Yep.
I did my physical work at night, take a shower. It's time for, you know, dinner, hanging out with my wife, chilling out a little bit.
Okay. Transition. What's a day of eating look like?
So I'm not a big breakfast guy. What do you want to call that? Intermittent fasting or not? I never have been. So I skip breakfast.
Zero. Coffee.
A little bit of Laird, which has a little caloric content. Probably not going to break fast.
Right.
Lunch, pretty simple. Meal fit a lot of the times. But more protein than anything, heavy veggies. And then I would say that I kind of back in carb load. So as I go through the day, I'm going to add a little more carbs, which can help with sleep and hormone regulation at night. And I hate to admit it, I have a sweet tooth.
Yeah.
So like I'm trying to tame that as healthy as I can after dinner.
Right.
So dark chocolate, something that we're going to make, like some sort of avocado chocolate mousse or something like that. So that's kind of a typical day. Like I'm pretty boring and I always have been. Like same thing, I could eat it every day. I don't need a ton of variety.
But here's the thing though, Bo, if you look at successful people and people that are like next level, and I'm not talking about the guy that makes a lot of money. I'm talking about like the consistently successful long-term, the Nick Sabans of the world, the Zuckerbergs, the Steve Jobs when he was alive, eat the same thing within two or three things. Wear the same thing within two or three things. Because I'm telling you something, it takes calories to make decisions.
Yeah.
It takes calories to make decisions. So you've seen a lot of success. So a lot of successful people do the same things all the time. And that's the way I'm like. Wake up at the same time every day, same morning routine, same variants of foods every day. And so, I totally agree. So next question.
It's reducing your bandwidth.
Don't
put yourself out there with 1,000 decisions. Like, take them down, and then the critical ones, you're fully present for.
You got
your energy.
Yeah. So, reading. You talked about reading earlier. What's your favorite book of all time?
Oh, my goodness. Favorite book. It's kind of cliche, but it really is one of my favorites. The Alchemist.
You can't say the Bible. Okay, I was going to say.
You can't say the Bible. I forgot to say that. The Alchemist is up there, man.
Really?
Yeah.
I've not read that. I hear it's amazing.
Dude, I'll give you my copy. It's fiction, but I think fiction is missing in our lives nowadays. Like, we don't get enough storytelling, which if you want to go back to sales, is going to help a lot of stuff. But The Alchemist is a great book just because it's a story about making your life what you want it, right? That's not, that's hidden behind this kind of whimsical story. But I'm a huge kind of on the low sci-fi kind of fantasy nerd. Like, I like stories that are so unrealistic or so out there that they can't happen because I love the imagination behind that creative process.
Right. Okay. What are you reading right now?
Right now, I'm reading a lot of stuff. I'm reading The Last American Man, which is a really interesting story about a guy named Eustace Conway that has lived off the land. He owns 1,000 acres in North Carolina called Turtle Island.
Wow.
He holds kind of these little camps for adults and kids. And I read about 20 books at once.
How many?
About 20. So I'm hopping around. I've got reading ADD.
Yeah.
So what else we got?
20?
Yeah. So Kindle was the best and worst gift I was ever given. Yeah. So I still like paperback books.
I was going to say, I'm like,
Last American Man is paperback. A patient actually gave me that on, she thought I'd like it and she was spot on.
Right.
But on my Kindle, I mean, it's the Six Mass Extinction is on there that I'm getting after right now. I think it's the title. Kelly Starrett was telling me the story about every human being that ever lived.
Wow.
I like stories about conservation, human performance, the environment. Yeah, kind of anything.
So do you keep a fiction or two going all the time? Or
yeah,
no?
That's kind of like the end of the night. So I can't, if I sit down and try to read like something about gait and biomechanics, I'm out, right? So if do that in the morning, that'll work really well for me.
That's good. That's real good advice. So I got a buddy that's trying to be a PT in Nashville, and he did some kind of paper or study or whatever on sleep. One of the things he talked about was make yourself 10 minutes before you go to bed, literally sit in bed, read, lie down, go to bed.
And I'm a huge proponent on like bedtime, hygiene, routine. Yeah, like, and that's, my wife and I go back and forth on that because she can sleep anytime, so she can zonk out.
Yeah.
And I'm like, hey, let's kind of do this. She doesn't need it. I do, so I'm always trying to push.
I don't need it either.
Yeah.
Like, I can go to sleep really quick, but like the blue light stuff, like I got blue light glasses, like my wife loves TV. I don't like TV.
Yeah.
And so I've been wearing them, watching TV with her and those things like that. And so I'm trying to morph into getting into the routine a little bit more. And I'd rather go to bed early too.
I'm in bed I'm probably asleep by 10 every night.
I would love, 9:30 is the sweet spot for me.
Yeah.
That's a sweet spot. If I can do that, if I can be in bed before 10, I'm happy. If I can be in bed before at 9:30,
yeah,
I'm really, really good.
We're old, huh?
Oh, yeah. So you're 35. It's not too long ago. If you could go back to your 20-year-old self, what would you tell him?
I think what I said earlier.
Yeah, I was going to say, yeah.
Give it everything you got, no matter what it is.
Right.
You know, and that is really, really true. And I'm not saying this to sound cocky whatsoever, but when you're somewhat talented at a lot of things or you got a little skill, you can just kind of like breeze through.
Absolutely.
And that's not always the best thing, right? So I've turned into a grinder because I want to be the best at what I'm doing.
Right. Yeah.
But I'm lucky that I got that way because I could have just like kept kind of breezing through life.
No doubt. And so many times you hear people talk about owning your own business or being great. One of the things that everybody says is find something and be great at it.
Mm-hmm.
And when you're great at it, that's when you can then begin to be an expert. That's when you can then begin to take the skill that you've developed or take the talent or the knowledge, whatever, and then be a salesperson and then go monetize whatever it is you know.
Mm-hmm.
So that's good. So, last thing before we leave. So you've got multiple into the trail running. You've got a lot of educational stuff going on. So Anthro Health Podcast, tell me about it, where people can go to hear it, any websites, anything like that. But tell me specifically about what you're doing there and what kind of your goal is there.
Yeah. So Anthro Health, obviously it's in the name, right? Human health.
Yep.
And I'm trying to get experts within the health field and the environmental conservation field. And I'm trying to blend those two together because my large mission would be that we are becoming grossly disconnected from the outside natural world, which there really is not a disconnect whatsoever. We create that disconnect.
Right. Absolutely.
And I think if we realize that and we live a little more true to our kind of natural self, we'd have a lot less of the healthcare issues that we face. People would spend a lot less time in my office.
Right.
So I try to bring on experts and almost extract the information into the other field, right? Yeah. So if I bring on somebody that's a chiro, we may not talk about chiropractic. We may talk about, you know, what they do for hobbies, how they enjoy the outdoor world, right? If I bring on an environmental expert, I may say, what do you do to take care of your health?
Right.
And try to show people like the people that are the best in their field are taking care of themselves as a whole person. They're not just all in on this thing and then everything else is just kind of a byproduct.
That's awesome. Good. Hey guys, so Bo is absolutely amazing. We talked about him being a commodities broker to marrying Sloan to being a chiropractor to moving to a town that he had no idea what was in Birmingham, who was in Birmingham, nothing at all. But what we learned is that he has a tremendous amount of faith, number one, not only in his beliefs in God, but also in his skill. And it takes a lot to trust your skill. We're in a world where there's a lot of depression and things like that going on. And what Bo has demonstrated throughout his life, and he has lived it to the highest, is that he is willing to stop, change direction, and go and explore and go and do what he feels led to do. Been a lot of people in his life to say, no, you can't do this, or no, you shouldn't do this. But he's done it anyway, and he's proven to be an amazing success in a town that where he didn't know anybody 5 or 6 years ago. And so he is a true example of what an entrepreneur is, but what someone that wants to give back to people. His business model is a little bit different, but it's a model worth following, or at least worth analyzing in what you're doing, especially if you are in any kind of the health field. When I say the health field, I mean food, nutrition, health, sports, anything where you're dealing with people in the physical body. So go to the Anthro Health Podcast, go to his website at The Farm, and check out what he's doing. He's doing amazing things. He's all over social media. We're going to put those links down here on the video. But also, if you have any questions, please email me, info@mealfit.co, and I will connect you with him. He's an amazing guy who we send our family to. And so check out Bo Beard any way that you can. Please subscribe to our YouTube channel, Entrepreneur Dad, and then also our podcast. And we are all over social media, and those links are below as well. So thank you so much, guys. We look forward to serving you in the future.